may be able to take audience questions too, because I think we invited a little bit of a broader audience for this presentation. So let me call the meeting to order. We do not have a quorum as of yet, but we also do not have any action items on this agenda, so we can begin the meeting without the quorum. And I will call the meeting to order in a minute, but let's go ahead and go through the meeting norms first and the land acknowledgement just to give, hopefully some more board members the opportunity to join us. So the meeting norms. The board recognizes the importance of all stakeholder voices at OSA. Collaboration and community are essential to the viability of our school. The purpose of this meeting is for our board of directors to meet with each other and conduct school business, as well as to receive input from the school staff and the community via public comment. Public comment may be made on topics that relate to the school. Comment on non-agenda items may be made at the beginning of the meeting. After hearing a report, members of the public have the opportunity to offer comments in a designated time prior to the board discussion on that agenda item. Outside of public comment, members of the public are also welcome to observe the meeting. Please use the raise hand function to make public comment. If you cannot use the raise hand function, you can sign up for public comment in the chat. We want to be sure to see all the signups, so keeping the chat clear when public comment signups are being called is appreciated. You may sign up for public comment at any time prior to the conclusion of public comment for that agenda item. You do not need to wait for public comment to be called to sign up. It may sign up for public comment during the presentation of the report or at any time prior. Public comment will be capped at 3 minutes per speaker. To be sure of hearing from a variety of people, minutes may not be transferred to other speakers. The board cannot respond to public comment on non-agenda items. This does not mean the board is not listening. Staff will do our best to respond to chat comments throughout the meeting, but may not be able to respond to every single one. To be sure your comments are heard by board members, please sign up for public comment. We strive to be a learning community that learns from each other. We are also a community comprised of people who care very deeply about the school. We recognize that all voices are not treated equally in our society, but aim to value and respect all voices equally in this forum. We may have different ideas of how to achieve goals, and we may feel passionate about our points of view. This needs to be a safe place for a variety of opinions. Finally, we address each other in a respectful manner to foster collaboration, build community, and to model good citizenship to our students. For clarification on the recording, board members and members of the public should please state their name prior to speaking. The meeting is being recorded and the audio is posted on the school website. In the OSA land acknowledgement, OSA is situated on Huichin, the unceded territories of the Chocheno-speaking Lishan Ohlone peoples who have lived upon this land since the beginning of time. Indigenous peoples in California, the Americas, and around the world are still here. OSA recognizes the historic genocide and ethnic cleansing inflicted upon Indigenous peoples in California and the Americas, including their forced removal from ancestral lands and the deliberate and systemic destruction of their communities and culture. These conditions are ongoing, and Indigenous people have been fighting against cultural erasure and for their sovereignty since the beginning of colonization. To this end, we as a community strive to honor the Indigenous members of our community, uplift their voices and contributions to arts and culture, center Indigenous people's worldviews in our classrooms, and support Indigenous sovereignty everywhere. This land acknowledgement is a small act in supporting Indigenous communities and centering the justice, equity, diversity, and inclusion work within the Oakland School for the Arts. Solidarity with Indigenous nations can include donating time and money to Indigenous-led organizations, amplifying the voices of Indigenous people, leading grassroots change movements, and returning land. So thank you all for listening to that. And let's go ahead and call the meeting to order and do a roll call. So I see Mike Barr.
Here.
Thank you. Steve Borg.
Here.
Thank you. Dwayne Walton.
Here.
Thank you, Dwayne. And Wiling?
Here.
Thank you. So we actually do have a quorum. So thank you everybody for joining us. And we'll go to public comment before we turn it over to Catherine for her presentation. Do we have any public comment? No. Okay. All right. Then let's go straight to Catherine. Let me introduce Catherine, our advancement director. I want to thank her for putting this presentation together and for squeezing this in as she's working through her transition. And thank you, Lisa, for supporting this presentation. So go ahead, Catherine, take it away.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Josefina. And thank you, everybody, for being here tonight. I know it's a big ask to reserve any extra time that we have right now. So I just want to say thank you so much for being here. And I also just want to give just a little note here that there's no way that I could possibly have captured everything in the advancement department here. So just before I start, just please keep in mind that this was designed with the board specifically in mind. And given the fact that this is a new board in a lot of ways, that some parents are relatively new compared to others, it's sort of, I'm starting from scratch in a lot of ways, and just sort of the intention is to provide a lot of high level information while also touching upon a ton of details. So the way that I sort of imagine this happening, I have this presentation broken down into five sections, and each given about 15 minutes each. So if we stick to that, we'll actually get out a little early. But I've also allotted a little extra time there just in case there needs to be some discussion. So I'm not always totally savvy with how the board discussions work in a public meeting. So Josefina, if you could just help me with that. I think the most natural breaks to have board discussions would be after each section. So, but we can work together on that.
Okay, let's go ahead and do that then, Catherine. After each section, we'll call for questions.
Excellent. Okay, so I'm just going to share my screen. Okay, so let me just do my, okay. Okay. So topics for discussion for this evening, I just wanted to provide a very quick and high level historical snapshot. Heads up too, you're also going to see a lot of graphs in this presentation. I hope I don't bore anybody with the numbers, and I hope you can see all the numbers. Number two, we will do just a brief conversation around philanthropic revenue sources. So just a high level snapshot of the local fundraising that I have managed over the years. The third topic will be the board's role, and I very much look forward to that discussion around how the board can be engaged going forward, and we can also talk about how they have been in the past. Volunteer opportunities, lots of exciting opportunities coming up for FY22 and beyond, and finally, some action-based strategies for the board specifically. Okay, so looking at just a high level snapshot of historical fundraising at OSA, the first graph that I'd like everybody to just take a quick look at is the years in which a consulting firm called VentureSpark was primarily responsible for the majority of fundraising at OSA. My understanding is that the first development director began, I want to say, in 2010. And at that point was 20 hours a week. It was very part-time. And she helped to get the annual fund started and some other board engagement activities. But the real bulk of the fundraising, the large amounts of dollars were actually coming in through a consultant named Marianne Gaddy, who worked with VentureSpark. And VentureSpark was a consulting firm that Jerry Brown brought in to assist with some fundraising efforts. So you can see here from 2002 to 2012, these numbers simply represent the dollars that were coming in through the gala. So you can see there's a couple of years where there's quite a jump. And the reason why you see these jumps and these pretty significant increases is because this is when the capital campaign was happening for the Fox Theater. So there's a lot of nuances that go into fundraising, generally speaking, especially with a campaign. So in order to get the real true story of these years, you would have to look at the detail. So there are certain donors that came in at certain levels, certain years, I would say in 2008, there was a real spike in some higher level donors. So a couple of $100,000 donors, there was a $500,000 donor, there was a $1 million donor at one point, but all of that was in support of the capital campaign, which took many years to complete. So that is the explanation for these numbers. And then you can see in 2011, there was quite a drop. I don't personally know what that story was. All I have is the detail of the donors, but there's it's neither here nor there, but it's just interesting to show. So the second graph here is from when I have been at OSA to present. So what I did was just basically break down the fundraising by activity. You won't see here all of the events that we did. So for example, you won't see OSA Creates broken down here because the majority of the funds raised from OSA Creates go to support the annual fund. And the reason why is because the constituents that are giving at that type of event are what we consider annual fund donors. You also won't see Heart of Oakland separated out because again, some of those, the donations come in our parents or annual fund donors. And then the remaining will be what's called institutional giving donors. So I just wanna take a moment and just have everybody just absorb this as much as you can, just so you can kind of see all of the efforts really in outside of the Governor's Gala. If you look at all of the other categories, that is essentially the bulk of the work that we have been doing over the years in preparation of knowing that the gala was going to go away at one point. In terms of the Governor's Gala, I started managing the Governor's Gala in 2013-14, I believe. And if not, that was my first partnership with Marianne, and then I fully owned it in 14-15. So at that time, we did not have a fully staffed development department, and in a lot of ways, we still don't. But at that time I was 20 hours a week. I think by 14-15, I finally moved to a 0.8 and I had one part-time staff person assisting with all of this. So over the years since then, we have grown the department. We've had a couple of different positions and the ones that remain now are, we have an associate director of advancement position and that is full-time. And we have a 0.75 institutional giving manager. So we can get into that later, but I think it's important to just know that history because it was a major impact on the department in a lot of ways and the school, the organization, once that break happened between the outside consulting firm and then having to absorb the Governor's Gala as well. So just what's really interesting here too, the annual fund you'll see, just you can very quickly see that it's grown over the years. And hopefully this will make sense later in a later slide when you see why we project the numbers that we project for the annual fund in terms of growth. The board benefit here, this is something that I hope we can talk about maybe later at a later slide, but this was one effort that a previous board put together. They started in order to support the fundraising efforts for OSA. So the idea of this board benefit was it was always a music-oriented event. It was hosted at Yoshi's or Freight and Salvage. And the idea was to get something in place that was a revenue generator so that we would be ready to go once the gala was complete with the governor, then we would have an event already in place. The reason why it stopped in 2016-17 had a lot to do with the transition of an ED at that time, as well as just capacity of the department. They both would happen in the spring. So both the board benefit as well as the Governor's Gala. And at one point it just became too much. And at a certain point as a development person, you always have to go for where the dollars are and focus on that. So we did a careful management of the Governor's Gala over the years. The reason why you see the numbers have dwindled was because we knew in advance. So when I say we, I'm referring to the team that I worked with on just the gala, and that consisted of Jerry and his right-hand fundraiser, who at that time was the CFO of the California Democratic Party. Her name is Angie Tate, she's fabulous. She and I worked very closely together to manage these relationships as well as to set goals and to help set projections. So we knew way in advance that that we would lose significant funds as the years went by. And of course, I can answer any questions about that in more detail, but where we saw the major, major shift was in 2020. So not only because of COVID, We had plans in advance to have one final gala this year, and we had projected or set a goal to raise about $250,000. And due to COVID, we obviously weren't able to have that event. And due to some other transitions that were happening that year, we weren't able to host that event. So this is where we took a pretty big hit in a way. If we were able to host that event and still come up with 250, we would have actually hit our goal that year. But this is also a year too that's important, just to note that I was a one woman show until about November of that year. So we missed a big opportunity in the beginning of the year to do a significant push around the annual fund. So all to say that here's where we're at in 2021. We've broke 900, which is fabulous. But the real message here is that looking back, we have great momentum moving forward in terms of getting our fundraising program to a level where it was bringing in, or can be bringing in, close to the same numbers that we were used to seeing back in the day when we had this very unusual, very fortunate event that no other nonprofit has called the Governor's Gala. So just moving forward here, I just want to call out, Okay, so moving back, just to clarify here that the grants, the reason why they're separated out was just to show the additional grant writing efforts that were happening in the Office of Advancement. Keep in mind that the Governor's Gala consisted of all kinds of institutional donors, individual donors, and all kinds of methods in which we received the funds. So there was a lot of grant writing involved with that effort, but it's just the way that the money was categorized and in a way to tell the story. Board membership, again, this is not to, it's just to simply show that these are personal contributions made by the board. Normally, when we report to the public, we actually include these contributions towards the annual fund. This does not include friends donations that board members have brought to certain events. So if a board member brought somebody and that person made a donation, it does not include that information here. We have that information available depending on the year in which whether or not we tracked it or not. And then other, this category is just outside fundraising activities, usually major gifts, work that's happening on the side that represents new donors. Depending on the year, it also might include a couple of relationships that have transitioned over from the gala, for example. Okay, I'm gonna move on before I confuse myself. Okay, so where we're at today, I just want to share this graph. The donor makeup has changed significantly over the years, but this is where we're at now. When you compare this to the national average of nonprofits, usually you'll see about 80% of contributions are coming in from individuals, and usually a little less from foundations and corporations. This is about on point. What this means for us is just when another nonprofit has made a contribution to us. So this actually represents a donation from the San Francisco Ballet. So it's just something to keep in mind as we plan for the future. One of my goals has always been to really focus not only on foundations and corporations, which together is what we call institutional giving, but my focus personally has always been on individuals, because there is a lot of potential to increase our donations from individuals. And what I mean by individuals is everything from parent, alumni, board member, to friends and family and staff members. I include them too. Okay. So this piece is really important to share because, and I'll come back to this in a later slide, but I just want the board to wrap their heads around this piece. It's a significant part of the equation as you plan for going forward. So this is what we were used to receiving in terms of major gifts in the past. And I only included the last 5 years just because I can include it for years prior, but I think this gets the point across. So what we consider a major gift at OSA is $5,000 and above. Of course, I included a couple other giving levels below that, just so you can see where the growth has been in some areas, as well as where the growth can be in other areas going forward. So 1500, just a point of reference, was our per student ask this year. So I was pleased to see, and this information is as of June 9th. We have had a few more gifts come in since then, so I can certainly update this and send it later. But it's just interesting for people to know that I feel like we had a very positive response to that amount. We also had positive responses to other amounts in the middle. Where we could use some growth, obviously, is let's get a couple more 25K gifts, 10K gifts, 50K and 100. Again, I'll come back to that. Oops. Okay. So that was a look at kind of where we're at now. Where are we going? So this is a very simple explanation, and I just call your attention to where the yellow highlights are. So this year, the goal was to raise 800. We just broke 900. And then based on the tracking of this year and the successes of this year helped us to, and also information around what we know about our donors, helps us to inform our goals going forward. So in FY22, Advancement has been given the goal to raise 1 million, and then it will only increase for years after that. Please don't pay too much attention to this information right here. This is nuanced and it needs more attention. I feel totally confident about FY22, but so much changes from year to year that please do not rely on this going forward. Your new director will help you with that. Okay, so I'm coming back to this because I want to say in reference to the question, where are we going? I added a column here just to show an example. Again, you will work with your new director on this to really solidify these numbers, but this is just shown here as more of a thought experiment and to show an example of how this works. So where I personally see the opportunity and is in major gifts. And you need somebody, and you also need a team of committed individuals. Potentially some will come from the board who can assist with helping us to increase the numbers of major gifts that we are receiving at any given level here. So as part of a director's role, a director of advancement, as we're planning for next year, for example, I'm working on the fund development plan for FY22, we create what's called a major gifts chart. And this is something like that right here. So what we do is we look at our donor base, we see, look at the potential. We've done some research over the years where we have a sense, a pretty strong sense of what the potential is. We even have some indication from certain individuals and corporations of what their capacity might be. So that informs us how we can set goals. So I would love to see us getting back to receiving at least one $100,000 contribution next year. Again, we need to increase our contributions at the $50,000 level and then so on and so forth. And you can kind of see how this is mapped out. This isn't always pulled out of thin air. I mean, it's never pulled out of thin air, but it's important to understand that in order to even get to these numbers, before you can consider them a projection, what a good development person should do is look at, not narrow in and put all of your eggs in one basket for one potential $100,000 donor. You need to be researching at least 4 to 8 individuals or institutions who have capacity to give at that level. And then there's a lot of behind the scenes work that happens around setting a plan for each of those donors. And there's what's called a donor stage or a donor cycle that consists of 5 different stages. So it begins with the cold initiation, the welcome, the bringing in, the cultivation, and it ends with the ask. And sometimes that cycle can last anywhere from a year, depending on the level of donor. It can last 3 years until you get to that point. So that's why it's really important as the board considers moving in the direction of a capital campaign that you begin to do this work now, because you are going to need to plan a few multi or double asks in any given year coming up soon, because what we still need to raise that $1.1 million in FY23. But if a capital campaign is already launched, you also, you know, you might need to raise more that year. So just some really careful, thoughtful and thoughtful planning needs to go into this type of work. I will stop there before I get into the next topic, and maybe we can open it up for board discussion.
Yeah, that sounds great. Let's see if there's any, let's do board discussion, and then we'll try to do like public comment if there's any public comment, so that way we're weaving that in as well. So board questions and our comments. Yes, Mike, go ahead.
Catherine, thank you for that. Can you go back to the first slide with all the numbers on it by year?
Yes.
One of the things that I think is an important talking point for this board is, as we look at those numbers, I think I was mentally calculating like 30-ish million dollars across all those years of fundraising. Give or take, let's say it's 30 million. A funder could rightfully ask, where did the money go? And we know that we are unique in terms of charter schools, because we have an art school and that costs more money. We know that we have a need to fundraise to balance the books each year. It would be, I don't know how much work it would be, and far be it for me to direct you to do something in your last, you know, 5 days, work days in the office. But I wonder if something you guys may have records of. I think it means, you know, what's the total raised? How much of that went towards capital? In other words, we raised $30 million and we spent $8 million on a building. The other $22 million was used just to balance the books, you know, for the last 19 years. Or I'm talking in very, very high numbers, because I think that's an important thing for the board to understand as we help navigate this stuff. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think that would be helpful, because we're a unique organization. I don't know how others feel about that, but it would be helpful to really understand, of the total raised, a chunk went to capital campaign, a chunk went to operating, maybe there's some other category that I'm not thinking of right now, because I think that helps create the framework for the future. So I don't know how other board members feel, whether that would be useful or not, but that's one thing that's the question I had looking at these numbers.
Mike, I would agree. I mean, it's useful. I definitely, and I'll just say, it shouldn't be a task Catherine should, you know, take on. We should just sort of kind of, you know, put a pin in it, you know, for an action item for the new person coming in.
Yeah.
But it's more so, it also sets up, when we talk about the package, the story around, yep, for our, you know, capital campaigns, I mean, it tells the story in terms of how we've utilized, you know, how, you know, things may have shifted given kind of this new normal we're in and whatever. But yeah, it should be a part of the story, you know, that we build.
Other board comment? Our questions?
I don't want to hug the airspace. Nobody else says I have a second question.
Well, let me just say to the point you just made and that Dwayne followed up on is, I mean, I guess what I would envision is like a pie chart, which would break up the different categories of, you know, how the development money was spent. Maybe that's a pie chart that represents on average, you know, this is what the development expenditures look like. I mean, you know, so something like that, because, you know, I think to make it more accessible to people, you need that kind of graphic, as opposed to,
yeah,
showing 20 years of, you know, or whatever, what that looks like. So just to keep that in mind.
And I wasn't involved with the school back in the early days, but you look at, you know, 2005 to 2010, you know, that's a huge chunk of money. Was that all for capital? And if so, how can we sort of model that? But I think we're all talking about the same. I think we're all talking about the same goal, which is create a clear picture on why do we need to raise money and what do we need to raise it for. The other question I had, Catherine, if you can go to the where you had the pyramid, for lack of a better word, of the major gifts chart with the quantities. I know this is easy to say, but really hard to do. But, you know, if you look at 76 people in the bottom right-hand corner or the $1,500 range, and, you know, one person in the $25,000 range, if we could convert, you know, a handful of those, right? I'm thinking about the time of touching and getting to know and courting and moving these folks through the stages. Obviously, it's much, you have to be careful about putting all your eggs in one basket, as you said, but it's also hard to build an organization on a bunch of small things. It would be great if somebody just gave us $1 million tomorrow for next year. That ain't going to happen. But you know, I think it's important for, you know, as the new team comes in, to think about, like, what's the investment that the team has to make for a $1,500, $2,500 funder versus $25, $50, or $100, and think about that yield. I'm not a fundraiser by profession, but I've seen sort of that kind of analysis be helpful as we think about next steps.
Okay, any other board questions or comments about this section?
Yeah, I had a question. The organization that we were using back when we were getting $2 and $3 million worth of donations, was that because they're so talented? Is that because they were connected to the governor in the sense that, you know, they were able to recruit the right people who were involved in politics at the time? Or, you know, was there something about our story that was different? It's just, it's such a, you know, big difference is triple from what we're getting now. So I'm just curious, what were the elements that went into that difference?
Am I allowed to answer anything?
Yes, you can answer.
Okay, great. So let me answer the previous question. So about of the money that you saw raised, about $10 million went towards the capital campaign. But you are in for a treat when you go back and look at the documents around the capital campaign work that happened with the Fox, because it was a much bigger, I think the whole thing was around an $80 million campaign. So it was a much bigger campaign where only about $10 million came to OSA, but you really need to go back through all of the paperwork. The files that I was given was basically a spreadsheet just showing numbers, which, knowing what I know and how Jerry had worked in the past, it was probably, a one-time shot of an ask that included multiple asks. So we would have to go back and look at, in terms of how the money was spent. Things have shifted so dramatically since then in terms of just our, even our finance department, that and new information continues to arise sometimes in terms of some of the donations that were made back then. So it's like a paper trail that you just have to follow. And usually in my work with Jerry, the request was very simple, and it was just to support Oakland School for the Arts. So I have all of those files, and I will be transferring them over. So I'm sure a more clear picture can be put together around that. And then Wei-Ling, your question around Marianne. So number one, it's a capital campaign. So you have to think about context. You have to go back to that time when the Fox was being renovated. It was a very exciting project for donors to get behind. Number two, she was a great fundraiser. Number three, she also knew how to leverage folks who were in powerful positions. She had access to that. And she didn't do a lot of the asks on her own, but would filter them through others who were in a better or in a more powerful position, I should say. So I don't know if that answers your question, but I think it has a lot to do with the fact that you might start seeing these types of contributions come in when you do a capital campaign, because it's very exciting and it's a legacy thing. So yeah, I'll just stop there. Do you have more questions around that?
Okay, any other questions from the board or comments? No, well, are there any public comments? I don't see any. So let's go ahead and continue, Catherine, to the next section.
Okay. Okay, so, gosh, there's so much more I want to say about that, but I'll save it for the end. Okay, so when we look at the philanthropic revenue sources in terms of development going forward, we have three areas right now. One is the annual fund, the second is institutional giving, and the third is around special events. So with the annual fund, you all are families. So you have a good sense of what the annual fund is and sort of the program, the year-long campaign that happens every year. Over the years, we've grown it from, as that chart had indicated, around 100K to this year, we broke our goal of 500 and hit close to 600. So where we are lacking with the annual fund and where we will need to put some really special attention into would be around family participation, as well as some volunteer opportunities, which I'll get to later. But currently right now we're ending the year at about 53% participation from our families. On our best year, we had 68%. So there's just a lot of room for conversation around how to reach those families who are not contributing, and then coming up with really creative ways in outside of the boring, very structural things you have to do every year to keep an annual fund going, like 5 to 6 direct mail campaigns, some e-campaigns sprinkled in there, and then some major donor work. So the way that we have approached increasing the annual fund over the years has been, and really our whole fundraising program has been around segmenting. So segmenting our donors really guides the entire work for the year. So that's actually something we will work on now before my departure, making sure that all of those segments are in place. And what that means is just various lists of various donors at various capacities. So when we have a donor, just to keep it really simple, we start by asking for a per student ask every year, which I would love to have a conversation about that here too, if it's appropriate. So what that amount helps us in the development side helps us to learn more about our donors, those who are contributing. So if somebody only gives, or doesn't only give, but they give $100, there's a story there. There's a reason why. It could just be based on capacity. It could be that simple, or it could be, lack of interest in the arts, or feeling pressured, or not getting the right kind of ask, really. So there's a lot of information that we receive from the contributions we get, and then we use that data to help inform our strategy going forward. So every donor who has come in at 1500, for example, who hit the per student ask, will receive a more tailored ask going forward, and an increased one. So they might be approached next year based on whatever research is available to us. They might be asked for $2,000 or $2,500. A lot of that's nuanced also, and there's a lot of information that goes into figuring out how much somebody should be asked for. Moving on to, let me just quickly say a few words, if I may, about the per student ask. So this is something that I've never totally felt until this year was grounded in logic. What I mean by that is I think that what we need to do going forward, especially as we approach sustainability through an equity lens, and we look at the total number of families who are contributing, and knowing that we don't have access to all of the reasons why people are giving or not, I think we need to be very careful and mindful about how we set that number. And the way that we got to 1500 this year was because we simply took the $800,000 gap and divided it by 820 students, which was what we were budgeted for. That came out to be about $1,000 per student, and then we added a $500 stretch. I felt comfortable with that, and I feel comfortable with that going forward. If there is discussion around doing what we've done in the past around increasing that amount, my request is just that there's a thoughtful conversation about why and what is that equation? Because this has to be accessible, and it also has to be based on research, also looking around at other organizations and other schools, when the common number that I have seen out there is 1,500. And this is private schools as well as public schools, if it's just a general ask to the public like that. So I just want to put that out there, and I'll move on now to institutional giving. So institutional giving is all of the donors and donations that come from corporations and foundations. We do not include, or I don't in my total, the new director might, but if there's a matching gift from an employer, that I actually track that towards annual fund. I connect that to the individual who made the original contribution. But we've run the numbers a couple different ways, and it doesn't make that big of a difference to include the matching gifts in institutional. But there's a lot of room for growth in that area. I think that if we could definitely, in terms of the annual fund, be strengthening our ask and pitch around receiving more matching gifts from employers. Institutional giving, though, what we're over the years, I was tasked with filling in the gap of where, knowing that Jerry, the scala was going to go away. And we knew at the transfer of the information when I took on the gala in 2014 or 15, we knew then that about 60% of those donors were political donors. That's what we called them. We knew, just meaning we knew that they weren't going to stick around. They didn't necessarily care about the arts. So that work of transitioning away from that really began then. So in the support of those efforts to replenish those funds, I did a lot of grant writing. And I did that in addition to my role as director for many years. And then at one or two years somewhere in there, I did have some support in that area. And then, of course, as you know, we hired Valerie Sally this year to take on all of the institutional giving, which is fantastic. So basically that frees her up to not only take on all of those relationships, which I think are around 40 relationships, but it also really empowers her to now manage the new prospect research, which she's doing a lot of currently right now. So she and I have sat down together. She has worked briefly with a consultant to help support that new donor research. And we've identified not only the careful transfer of the institutional donors that I currently manage, but also put a plan in place for looking ahead and not only looking at it just from one angle, like general operating, like the vague Oakland School for the Arts, but also looking at it in more specific buckets. So looking at, JEDI donors, looking at equity in the arts, looking at technology, looking at arts programming. If there's any opportunity that we can find for a donor to help underwrite a specific department, for example, we're looking at that. So, now that we have somebody in place who is close to full-time, she's 0.75, there's a lot of room for growth. And I also think there's a lot of opportunity here to, in terms of like legacy giving, planned giving, also with individuals as well, but definitely with the capital campaign and I don't know, potentially maybe an endowment down the road, I have no idea, but definitely with capital campaign. So that's kind of where we're at with institutional giving. In the past, it was just this hodgepodge that would be a part of every single activity we did, but now it's nice to see it actually becoming its own program within the larger program. And then finally, we have special events. So special events, again, as I mentioned earlier, they're not, I don't currently budget them out as their own separate items in a budget. We do set goals to it, but that's more of an internal process. And we also, again, the money that we receive goes towards these other buckets, the larger buckets. So with the special events, we've done a few over the years, a couple iterations on a couple different things. But now I feel pretty good in terms of the fundraising events that we've got something solid that we can repeat going forward for at least a year, up to 3 years. And those two events are the OSA Creates events. That is the what used to be called State of the School. It was also the annual fund kickoff 1 year. But now rebranding it as OSA Creates and essentially providing the same opportunity to educate our community about the sustainability of OSA, where we're at and what do we need going forward. A great opportunity to present the ask to the community as well. So the other event that we do is Heart of Oakland, as you know, and that has become basically a spring auction and a live fund to need. I definitely recommend doing that again going forward. And that is one way that we've tried to replace the spring event that used to be the Governor's Gala. We got a lot of feedback in the past around the Governor's Gala specifically being extremely exclusive, which it was. Ticket prices started at $2,500, and it was the vehicle in which we ran our major donor program in a lot of ways. But that's changing. That's all changing now. And there are major opportunities to not only continue to build community through our events, but also to gain more corporate sponsorship and also awareness and marketing and PR opportunities. I don't see special events as being like the end all be all. I really believe that the real work is behind the scenes doing the major donor work. I'll stop there. I think that's the end of that section.
Thank you, Catherine. So board, questions, comments? Yes, Mike?
Catherine, one of the things that was really resonated with me sort of early on in my time hearing the State of the Union ask or the State of the School ask was what it would cost to go get the value of the piano lessons that your kid would get if you got them out somewhere, you know, privately, the cost of art lessons, all kind of stuff. That really resonated with me. And I remember a pretty direct connection between that and the amount of the ask at the time. But I don't know if that's still a story that plays. So that's sort of something that could appeal to the upper end of the parent community, I think. The other thing I'm wondering is 47% of the parents didn't give. And I'm wondering if there's any test messaging around how would you like to support a family that can't donate? You don't quite word it that way, but you know, our free reduced lunch percentage is quite low. It's 15%. Our hypothesis is that over the years that's going to go up because we're going to recruit in sort of different communities. I'm kind of wondering if you talked a little bit about somebody who's given $1,500, you might ask them for $2,000 next year because you know they're specialized stuff. But I wonder if we've positioned it for the parent giving as sort of like a menu option. Fund your kid plus, a play. Fund your kid plus another kid. Fund your kid plus half of the kid. Any of that kind of stuff. You don't need to respond. I think it'd be interesting to sort of see how that messaging could work. And I have no hypothesis as to how well it would work. That's just general brain dump for me.
I love that idea. And I also forgot to say, like, I definitely want this to be an idea generation session too. There's a lot of different ways that you can approach this. And one idea that I would love to see instituted, especially if you're going to go down the capital campaign route, is to maybe ask for a multi-year commitment now from families. Maybe new families coming in, you give them a different brochure starting now that asks for the next 3 or 4 years worth of commitments with growth, embedded in. You can also do a menu of options too. But I do think that money is often left on the table if you can't get to the research to get the right ask to the right group of people. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Other comments? I have some, but I want to give other board members an opportunity to jump in here. Anybody wants to?
I had a question. When you were talking about different asks for different people, was that including the parents?
Yeah. So we manage out of this, I think there's 670 donors this year, individuals. Mm-hmm. Those are all relationships that need to be managed. So the ones that some people will require like an actual conversation in person, others you can do the same with a letter. We usually start the baseline with a letter, just because of capacity. If we had a bigger team, then more of us can be managing more relationships. So I managed anywhere from 30 to 50 relationships this year or more, depending on what it was.
Okay, got it.
But like a very well-seasoned, well-trained major gifts officer would manage around 30 donors in a year.
Okay, maybe. so you and TT would call through some number of...
I would also work with Lisa on a few of these, and I've worked with Mike on some of these. And in the past, in the past, there's been other people on the board who were more interested, who have indicated that they were interested in fundraising. We did peer-to-peer fundraising, which you participated in, which helped. Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So I have a few things. One is my recollection of the state of the school also included just kind of an overview of the student outcomes, right? How are the students doing at the school? And I always thought that was very effective. I don't know if that's still part of that particular event, but I think we should figure out a way to bring that back in and maybe some comparisons, you know, in terms of how students are doing at the state or, you know, locally or whatever. But I thought that was always a really strong, case to be made. So that's one thing. The other thing is in the institutional giving front, I think our goal is really low in terms of grant writing. And we've talked about this repeatedly. And I know we're building capacity around grant writing, which I think is really great. But like, if we were successful at a couple of large grants, I mean, there's just huge potential there. There could be a $200,000 grant that, you know, takes, you know, it might take you 40 hours to write or something like that. There could be multiple year grants of $50,000 each year. And so there's a lot of potential there that I think we really should make a focus in terms of building out. So I would love to see that as well. And then in terms of the ask, you know, across all of these categories, really, I mean, an important, really important part of advancement and development is matching the person who's making the ask with the person that's being asked. So that's so critical. And I think this is a place where the board could play a bigger role too, because, you know, in some matches, it's the board member that, you know, can move the potential donor. So I think we should just need to be thinking about that too. Definitely. All right, so is there any public comment before we go to the next section? Okay, so Catherine, we have until 7:30, is that right?
Yes.
Okay, so we might wanna accelerate a little bit. I think we wanna spend, you know, probably a good chunk of the next, the time remaining on the board's role.
Let's do it.
I need to accelerate the last couple of sections, but go ahead.
Let's do it. Okay. Sorry. Okay. This is, I don't need to spend too much time on this, pretty self-explanatory. Move forward. Okay, the board's role. Okay, so I personally see the board as having four key responsibilities in terms of fundraising. I know that you all do so much in your role as board members, but just in terms of fundraising, and the four areas that I see are to be visionaries, donors, ambassadors, and supporters. So what do I mean by this? With being a visionary, I see it as just being able to provide the leadership for fundraising strategy and a platform for a given year or a given campaign. So decisions that are made at the board level obviously will impact the fundraising program at the school and will impact just the overall development program. The board is also a visionary in terms of helping to set fundraising goals for the organization. So all of the work that we do in collaboration around approving a budget or just organizing a budget in a given year has a direct impact on the development program. So in that way, I very much see the board as being visionary. In terms of being a donor, The goal is always to have 100% participation from a board of directors. So, and the last three years, we have achieved that, which is excellent. And we will continue to achieve that, or I hope that you continue to achieve that. And at the very end of the day, it just sets a really good example for what we're trying to do in terms of establishing a greater culture of philanthropy at OSA. And it shows your commitment to the cause. And the third area is to be an ambassador of OSA. So, and in my humble opinion, I actually find this to be the most important job of a board member in terms of fundraising, because the job is to make connections with support from the advancement office, where we can provide toolkits, we can provide communication pieces, anything that is needed to support this effort that the board is providing. But at the end of the day, the most valuable return that we can get is just making more connections. So I've always, in the last few years, especially when all of the transition happened in fundraising, I very much looked at all of our work as just being able, just keeping it afloat, just doing the bare minimum based on the capacity, just keeping these things going, keeping the relationships going as much as we possibly could. But where we always need more is around connections. So if somebody does have a connection to that $200,000 donor, bring them, like start that process now, because again, that cycle can take anywhere from a year to 3 years. So there needs to be more infrastructure that supports this. This is exactly where I'm heading with this whole thing. And then the four key responsibility of a board member is around just being a supporter. So what does that mean? That just means coming along with the development director, with Lisa, or with whomever is the most appropriate person to a donor meeting, make thank you calls, attend events, bring friends and family, just establish more connections, and just be out there, be visible to the community. I think one question that I would also just pose to the board, and you can engage in this here or not, but I've always found it helpful to talk about what other boards have you sat on in the past? What are you being asked to do in other boards that you're not being asked to do here? What have you seen be very effective in other organizations that we're not doing here? And I think that's a great place to start for a conversation around this. So I'll turn it over to you.
Board comments, questions. Oh, Catherine, could you also share what the board's goal is for this next year? Because we, in advance, we talked about a specific goal for the board.
Excellent. I was actually saving that to the end, but I'll bring it up.
Oh, sorry.
Okay, no, you're good. You're good. So it's perfect. Okay, so this has always been different from year to year. And basically, the baseline ask that has remained consistent over the years has been to ask a board member to contribute the per student ask. So for this year, an example, it was $1,500. So at the beginning of the year, I would work with Elise. We made the agreement that $1,500 was the appropriate ask. And then she and I collaborated on a letter. You all should have received a letter and a pledge form. I think that there's room to grow. And I think that ultimately, when you look at in that original chart that I shared at the very beginning, you'll see that the total board contributions this year was around $13,000. That's great. I think it can be higher potentially. And what I had proposed is to, as a way to increase board engagement around fundraising, is to set a goal to $40,000. So looking at that, we have a total of 8 board members going into next year, raise that per board member ask to $5,000, give or get. When you look at other organizations, that actually is kind of low. And I would definitely recommend that a more long-term plan is put in place around how to further increase this goal. But ultimately, what needs to happen is a discussion at the board level around what percentage of the total fundraising revenue do you want to be able to claim comes from the board. So in other organizations, it's anywhere from 1 to 10%. And I know that, you know, we do encourage people to just give what they can. So there's reality there. But I do think that a longer term plan needs to be in place. So with that, assuming that it's $1,500 going forward for a per student ask, then the board member is left to come up with the remaining $3,500. And that can be done in a lot of different ways. It can be done by bringing friends who make contributions. It can be made, let's say you know somebody who at a corporation who does event sponsorship $2,500, something like that. But it's just a way, a stepping stone to start to encourage more engagement with the board around fundraising specifically. And one other piece I just want to add that has been confusing in the past that I would love more clarity around this year, which is kind of why you didn't hear from me a lot in this follow-up, is because it was never totally clear to me if a parent is on the board and we are also asking for an annual fund contribution, if that person is being asked to make a double contribution or more, depending on if there are siblings. So my recommendation has always been to keep it fair and yes, ask for the board contribution and then ask for the annual fund contribution on top of that. But it's just never really been clear to me. So I definitely encourage a conversation around that.
Thank you. Board questions, comments?
Couple comments. Can you see me? I moved my camera. So I think this dovetails into the in part the email that you sent to the board earlier this week, Costafina, that you know, we need to have a philosophical conversation around the role of the board, and that includes development. And we also need to understand if we're going to have a separate organization. There was talk about forming a separate organization that's just focused on fundraising. And so that's just an area of clarity we're going to need to reach in terms of, in addition to our governance responsibilities, what's our fundraising development responsibilities. And then Catherine, are you going to talk about sort of how the board ideally would interact with the advancement office in terms of identifying who they know as major donors or people who are at foundations and whatnot? Because I think that's part of the issue, is it's a bit daunting for individuals. I think they have to do the ask, and that's not what we're asking here. We're really asking them to identify folks and then to work with advancement on how to do the outreach.
Yes, and that is part five of my presentation.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Other comments, questions on this section?
Well, we were being asked a question, right? Which is, what do we do on other boards? And then what do we think is the right approach for parent board members? And I would say that in answer to the first question, like I've had, you know, an ask for every board member that had to do with their, you know, that's a minimum amount that you either contribute or raise. And so I think that is an important concept, right? And so people were asked to do house parties, you know, people were asked to, you know, ask their employer for institutional contributions. So it wasn't just limited. People were asked to like go on foundation visits with the ED. So it wasn't just, you know, out of your pocket. And I think that's an important element of the second question too, which is, you know, one of the things that came up in sort of the conversations around adding parent seats to the board, it was the purpose behind it was an equity purpose, right? It was to make sure that the board had on it representatives who you know, were advocating for and serving, you know, underrepresented communities. And so we don't want the ask to be something that's prohibitive or that then becomes a barrier to people being on the board who, you know, have a particular equity, you know, lens and advocacy. And so I think it's fine to ask for the max, right? You know, you're a board member and you have three kids, you should do 4,500, but just to also be really clear that there are a lot of ways to like show that effort, you know, and that is an ask, and that's not, you know, that we also want to make sure that we're an inclusive, you know, organization, you know, and to offer like options for people, you know, why don't you make a pitch at the next, you know, vocal meeting, right? And why don't you do this? You know, just give people lots of options, right, for how they can contribute would be my thought.
Yeah, I will answer the board question about the other charter boards that I'm familiar with and or served on don't do fundraising. They break even on the state and federal dollars once they get to maturity. So I don't really have a proxy there. I think that I absolutely agree with Wei-Ling's point about expectations. But I do think that there are certain, I have completed and seen grant applications in the past that says, did all of your board members give you money, yes or no? It's a yes or no question. So be able to say 100%, even if somebody gives literally a dollar, right? Being able to answer yes to that question can get you, can get you through some foundation application processes. I think we need to, I actually hadn't thought about, you know, the three parent reps getting hit twice this year. So anyway, I agree with Wei-Ling's comments.
Other board back here?
And this is Duane. I'll just, again, make the comment. And so I think, you know, this is what Catherine's provided is very much what was, you know, asked in terms of the proposal. So it doesn't go against anything, you know, to you, Catherine. I would just say this is a volunteer board, you know, so you have to balance financial contribution with sweat equity. And so many of the boards, and I've served on many, you know, sat in the inner city where families, the majority of our families were on free and reduced lunch. So when you talk about trying to ask for $5,000, I mean, and Mike sort of touched on this, Wei-Ling did as well, where you've mentioned over the last 3 years, we've had 100% board contribution. We may go to a quarter of that, you know, if we really tried to implement this and expecting folks to do that. So it's just something we need to be mindful of. We never want to have, you know, this be a kind of serve as a level, a commitment for recruitment, whether it's parent representatives, whether it's, you know, the other board, you know, categories that we have. You never want that to be sort of a benchmark to come in. And I'm not saying that was the intent at all. I'm just sort of kind of echoing in a slightly different capacity what both Wei-Ling and Mike had shared. But again, I think we as a school, we as a community, I think that sweat equity, you know, needs to also, if we wanted to put a value on that and say, yeah, probably many of us have already hit that 5,000, if we had to kind of put a cost per hour, you know, by time that we're putting in. So we just need to be mindful of that. That's all. But I like, and Catherine, I think you've done everything that the board has asked. I really like this. It's very well thought out. It's, I mean, I don't have any, I think somebody can pick this up and run with it. So thank you for doing that. I just wanted to, you know, make that statement. Yeah.
Thank you
for that, Duane. And I wanted to just share that in advancement committee, we have talked about quantifying the sweat equity, but with this particular focus on the development work, because, you know, for me, this is true for myself too. My time on development is worth more than what I could give personally. And so we should be able to quantify that. Yeah. And then give board members credit for that, right? Because if you're involved in a, you know, $25,000 ask and you're putting your time into that, then that's way more than, you know, what I could give, for example. So I think that should be part of this equation where we're quantifying that amount, that volunteer, that sweat equity, because, you know, that's just, that can be amplified much, much larger than even $5,000. So that was one thing I wanted to say. In terms of like other boards that I participated in, there's been a whole range. I work with mostly free and reduced lunch school partnerships too. And for those partnerships, I've written grants, you know, on a volunteer basis for those schools to secure funds. And that's been pretty successful. So, you know, there's all kinds of ways that I think we could definitely lean in here. But I think one thing we haven't touched on yet is the marketing and communications tie in here. And so that's such a big part of the development work. And so I really want to put a pin in that as well as like, anybody who's making any kind of ask, including board members, really needs to have a great narrative that then they use, and there's consistency in the messaging about, you know, what we're asking for, why we're asking, what are the outcomes that we're sharing, and then that builds, you know, the profile of the school and the momentum around development. So any other comments?
Maybe I'll just say what I think training of the board in really the nuts and bolts of how to make the ask, right? Because it is intimidating, right, to ask people for money. Not everyone is comfortable with it, but it's, you know, once you're trained and once you've like done it a few times, you actually can pretty easily like get more comfortable with it, you know? And, you know, I think there's a role for everybody. I really agree with both what Mike and Josefina said, that, you know, everybody contributing a little, if you can't contribute a lot, $10 at least says I'm one of, you know, we got to 100%, right? And, you know, and I also think that it's, that when we ask for the sweat equity, we should carve out some of that sweat equity specifically for advancement. I think that's important too, you know, and we shouldn't underestimate like what we can do as peers, you know, you know, my last job, like we asked a lot of, you know, we did a lot of fundraising among low wage workers, right? And it was small amounts of money, but it was large participation, right? You know, a lot of people were willing, you know, even people who hardly made any money were out at all were like willing to give $10 a week for, you know, to support other workers on a strike or whatever, right? A political campaign or whatever. And so, you know, you just, it's doable. We just kind of need the training and we need, you know, what is my role in that? And yeah. So.
Okay. So let's keep going, Catherine, to the next section.
All right. Okay. So you thank you all for your feedback. You touched upon a lot of things that is really exciting and hopefully I can weave through in these next two slides. So there are a number of volunteer opportunities that I think should happen next year or that are already available and should really be put into place. We weren't able to, I've never really been the best volunteer manager. It just was never my strong suit. And then going forward next year, I mean, we've done some things over the years that have been supportive, but they've had to be very concentrated efforts in order to be able to meet the goals at the end of the day. So I think that going forward, a lot of growth will come out of a lot of what you're saying. So there is a lot of sweat equity and there is a lot of opportunity in just getting people in the same room together who are interested in this and who have connections and who are willing to share, just to have that conversation is extremely valuable. So as part of the director's role going forward, it should begin with each sitting down with each board member, and I'll just keep it to board members because that's who this is meant for. And you go over basically what is included in a toolkit. So this director would come to you and sit down and give you worksheets that are very simple, but basically just say, who do you know? Do you happen to know anybody at these already identified corporations and foundations that we have on our radar, but we don't know anybody there, but it would be great if we did. You know, they have this really cool grant that is like fits this program at OSA perfectly. And if we just had an in, that would be the right first step. So we need that infrastructure to be put into place. We need the marketing materials that have been mentioned to be created. And so that includes what I call a toolkit. It has an elevator pitch. It has basically a case statement. It can be a one-page case statement condensed based on who you're talking to, or it can be a full 5 to 10 page case statement if it's a capital campaign. There's a lot of different tools that can be provided, but that need to be determined in advance in conjunction and alignment with the fund development plan for that given year. It's always best to just plan for that in advance so that no one's like doing something at the last minute because of some random new idea that someone came up with. Anyway, all to say, let's start with this first volunteer group, which I think needs to be this working group that Steve had alluded to. So over the past few years, we've had a lot of different conversations around what this group looks like. And there's a formal way, a formal structure, which would be under the umbrella of creating a foundation or another, like a Friends of OSA group that has its own 501c3 number. There's a lot of accounting that can be done. There's a lot of pros and cons of going in that direction versus having it all be part of OSA. But regardless, at the end of the day, you need a working group of volunteers, of people who are development savvy and who are willing to do the ask or willing to make introductions at the very least, and who can meet on a regular basis to review that list together, who can then all together put plans in place for all of these new prospects or current prospects that need to be upsold. So I'm saying here that we really need to put a focus on folks who can really dive in and starting with the $5,000 and above asks. That would be a major step in the right direction. Another volunteer opportunity is just creating more opportunities for our parents to volunteer. So Wei-Ling, I love what you were saying about just asking parents to just encourage parents to do more peer-to-peer fundraising. There's hands down nothing stronger than a parent, and what I've seen, than a parent getting in front of other parents and asking for a contribution coming from the perspective of already being a donor to the school. And it's the same way when we have, we ask teachers over the years to make an ask to their community or to their classrooms, we definitely see a little push in fundraising. We have done what I would consider the bare minimum around, you know, getting a group in place just to support our annual fund efforts every year. But we can definitely say that it's been successful in certain ways. So I would encourage to keep that going forward, but just strengthen it. And, you know, there's a lot of different ideas that we can come up with around what this looks like. And more process can be put in place. Like I know this year, Romy did a great job of identifying at least 250 volunteers, I believe. So taking that to the next level and maybe making more of a focus be around fundraising going forward. Another area is definitely collaboration with the APT. I think that there are some really interesting conversations that can be had around how OSA and APT can collaborate. APT does carry their own 501c3, and so there needs to be some coordination around that, but I definitely think there's a lot of collaboration that we have at our fingertips there. And there's a lot of other types of fundraisers that maybe our small department don't have the capacity to handle, but that the APT would fit really well with the APT. So for example, other organizations do things like pancake breakfast or whatnot, and they raise us like $5,000 to go to support teachers or whatever. I think that's just one example of a way in which some collaboration can happen. And then of course, if the APT could be part of this larger fundraising working group as well, if they're interested in doing that kind of work. And then I think there's a major opportunity to expand upon an events committee, or just, I tried to have an events committee a couple of years ago and it just was moving too slow and I just had to do it. So I think that if someone who's a little more patient in that area, then you can set up a really strong events committee. And if it's working, you know, if you identify them well in advance so that you're working to plan out the Heart of Oakland event that's 7 months down the road, you'll have great success doing that. I also think that this group could spearhead other types of events that we don't currently have. I don't know that it would be appropriate for this group to manage, say, an appreciation event for donors, but that is, I think appreciation events should also be happening at OSA too. So there's a lot of room for conversation in the various events and the various volunteer opportunities. Of course, this doesn't really talk much specifically about the board, but we already covered that, so I didn't include you here as a separate group. any conversation here before I move on?
Maybe go on to the next section and then we'll take questions on these last two sections.
Okay, we're on our Last two slides, everyone. Okay, so some action-based strategies. Wei-Ling had mentioned trainings. That's my number one recommendation. So I think that training would be so helpful for everybody. And I wouldn't even just limit it to the board. Josefina and I have had conversations about this, but I would definitely invite some other key stakeholders, obviously our ED, some senior administration. And there are some key faculty members who understand this and who are interested in supporting with advancement and just have a natural knack for it. So I have identified who they are, and I definitely think that they should be engaged and just brought into this kind of next level training. It's a really fantastic professional development opportunity, but I also think that having a training from a professional can really help to eliminate a fear around to ask, and can also help put some really clear structure in place so that it doesn't feel like it's unattainable, but actually help you to put a plan in place and then help you track your progress towards your goals. I've seen it work in a couple other areas, and I definitely recommend that. And I think it should be an ongoing thing. I don't think it's just a one-off for all of the groups that I mentioned. A couple of other ways, some action-based ways in which the board can participate in fundraising. And in addition to sitting down with the development director and just going over all of the who do you know kind of thing, but also thinking a step further and just saying, you know, would you be willing to take on more of a leadership volunteer role and join or make an introduction on behalf of OSA? And again, thinking at that $5,000 level and above. 5,000 is low, but they all add up. So special event sponsorship, maybe you personally want to sponsor an event, but maybe you, again, like, you know somebody at a bank and that bank does underwrites events. Making a commitment that's something around the lines of attending a certain number of events per year. As you know, OSA puts on, goodness, like 50 or more events a year. If you can commit to two, that would be great. But just think about it in advance so that you're already planning ahead. And then let's say you choose two that are in the spring. You have all year to plan for that. So you can think about who do you want to invite? What friends do you want to invite? You can create, you can make it be whatever you want it to be. Donor cultivation and recognition activities. This is great, and it's a really, really easy way to get involved. And this actually is a very fun example of how you can be involved. Nobody says no to making a thank you call. It's like the best call you can make, especially in January, once we've hit our, usually by that time, we've raised more than half of our goal for the annual fund. But we have provided lists in the past to senior admin, to board members, and to our ED as well, and have asked to specifically make thank you calls. And that's such a great way to cultivate folks, to steward folks, and just really get to know the donors and have that opportunity for a conversation. And then finally, as Wei-Ling mentioned, hosting a major donor party is great. And I don't want to scare anybody by calling it a major donor party, but how I've seen it work in the past is that people have opened up their homes, or maybe they have connections to a venue that we get for free. And they, in lieu of birthday presents, let's say they have a birthday party and they just invite people to come, and instead of making a birthday, bringing a gift, just make a contribution. And we've raised upwards of $15,000 just doing that in one night. So when you think about just the amount of work that goes into something like that, it's totally worth it. And I definitely recommend just being creative around how you can integrate more of these into the plan for next year. And then finally, I wanted to end on this. This is just a sample, it's just a draft, and I'm working on this with Josefina. But I wanted to leave you with this so that maybe I could follow up after this meeting and send everybody a copy once it's obviously approved and edited. But this is an example of of a pledge form. So this is just the very beginning of a conversation that you can be having as a board member with the development office. So this just gives us a lot of information about you as an individual, as a human being, and as a donor. It helps us really set a plan for you in place, and then helps us understand how to follow up with you, which makes our jobs way easier just to have that in advance. In the past, again, thank you everybody, we have achieved 100% participation of people giving at various levels. But what I would really strongly recommend is that going forward for next year, please try and get your pledge form in as soon as possible. Because that way we can start our work with you earlier, and then we also don't have to track you down later. And we can say, the sooner we can say 100% participation, even if it's just a pledge, is great, and it's really good for us. What I'd love to see happen is that we get this pledge form in before, I have it down at the bottom, the due date as October 15th, and that's usually 5 days before our OSA creates, so that when you go to the community and you go to our parents, you can start by saying it's celebratory, like celebrating 100% participation. That will automatically encourage so many other people to make their gift that night, that day, or follow up soon thereafter. So, and below, you'll just see basically a reiteration of what was just in my previous slide here. These are just a few different ways that you can participate, and they're just a few ways. So maybe in these conversations with Josefina or with the new director or with Lisa, you can come up with different ways that aren't tracked here. Just anything that makes you excited about fundraising, I'm sure that this department will support. So that's basically all I want to say. It's very self-explanatory. But I think going forward, Josefina, if you agree that if we could maybe just plan to get this out as soon as possible, that would be a good next step.
Yes, I think that would be great. And I think this should go kind of hand in hand with just, you know, meeting with each board member individually and doing an inventory of, you know, relationships, contacts, kind of networks, a little bit more brainstorming with each board member about, you know, how they can support development individually, and then as a board, how we can support development. So I just wanted to leave a little bit of time for any questions or comments about these last two sections of the presentation. I don't know if there's been this kind of board training on advancement before. So also, if you could just let us know if it's happened before.
There's been different iterations of it. There's been more actually engaged, meaning that there were worksheets passed around and they were in person. So it was more like a feeling of a workshop. So as part of a bigger plan for training. So I would recommend that happens next.
Okay, let's go to Lisa. Go ahead, Lisa.
Hi, good evening. Just real quickly, I just wanted to give a big thank you to Catherine. Her work this year was pretty tremendous, especially during COVID. We met weekly, and there were committee meetings with the board monthly, events. There was switches of, you know, scheduling. So she went the extra mile. I'm also seeing Val here, who just stepped on board this year and should be recognized for her work with the grant writing. She's like done so many conversations with small groupings of people and really a focus on the JEDI work this year, which we started months and months and months ago. So did a tremendous job. And so I just wanted to recognize that and the work that Catherine's done, and to go $105,000 over the pledge, which we noticed on that first slide that she put up for this year, was pretty tremendous. So thank you, Catherine. Really, really wonderful job this year.
Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you, Lisa. Other board comments, feedback, questions as we wrap up?
Just amen to what Lisa just shared. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Catherine.
Yeah, and thank you for leaving us with so much information and ideas and strategies. That's really, really wonderful. I appreciate all of your work and that you're doing that for us.
I'm sorry, I didn't recognize Crystal. Crystal is right here. And she has been working with the Office of Advancement for a few years and is going to be joining us in a larger capacity next year. So thank you. Didn't need to leave anyone out.
Mm-hmm. Romy, did you have a comment?
Oh, I'm sorry. I was waving goodbye because it sounded like we were wrapping up.
Almost. We're almost there. All right. So just in terms of wrapping up, again, thank you, Catherine, and the advancement team. the whole team for all of your efforts this year. I think, you know, it's been very appreciated given all of the challenges this year. The fact that you were able to, you know, not just meet the goal, but exceed the goal is really outstanding. You will be missed, Catherine, but I know we'll stay connected. So, you know, really want to appreciate you and your longevity here at OSA. So, and thank you to the board members for leaning in to this conversation. It's the first of many, I think. And so we're on our way. So I'm going to adjourn the meeting and we'll see you all, or most of you, hopefully on Friday, if we're going to meet on Friday. So check your email and everybody have a good night.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye now.
Thank you.